Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Port Fishington Speakers Meeting. My name is Frank Spina. I am an alcoholic. This is an open meeting, so all are welcome to attend. Please turn off all cell phones and limit your movement during the meeting. I have a letter from the church here that was sent to our group. Okay, and it's says over the past few weeks, it's come to my attention that there are items that are missing from St. Michael's. You may have already received a call about the speakers that were upstairs in the sanctuary that are missing. I'm still hoping that these were put away with your items after the large conference meeting you had here. I've also been told that the workers in the kitchen are missing a saw. I've also noticed that the large tapestry banner of a Celtic cross is missing from the lounge over the love seat. In the past 5 years that I have been serving here at St. Michael's, stealing has never been a problem. With your help of getting the word out and taking extra precautions, I hope that this does not continue to be a source of concern. If anyone has any information on the missing items, please contact me. I will be out of town for the next week, but upon my return, I plan to be in contact with each of our AA groups. I have appreciated the good work your groups are providing for our communities and how you have always responded to any concerns we have had. So I feel confident that together we can handle any problem that may arise. Thank you in advance for your help. Sincerely, your Reverend Marjorie J. Neal, Pastor. We like our meeting here, okay? If anybody has any idea of who took this stuff or whatever, please come see one of us, all right? You know, it won't go any further than this. They just want their stuff back. And we like meeting here, so, okay, have some concern. If you know anything or anybody who was involved, please ask them to come forward. Thanks. Any more announcements? With that, I'd like to introduce our speaker for this evening. It's Jim from the sponsorship group in Chatham, New Jersey.
My name is Jim Bach. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here. It's good to be sober. My sobriety day is November 19th, 1987. My home group, as he said, is the sponsorship group. We meet Sunday night in Chatham at 8:30. And it's an awesome meeting. It's good to be down here. It's always an honor and a privilege to be able to speak at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I only wish you invited me a couple weeks ago so there was something left to steal. With that said, it's really an honor and a privilege to be standing behind one of these things and not entering a plea. I like to drink, and I'm going to talk about drinking. And if you don't like drinking like I like drinking, you might as well leave now. Man, I love the fucking drink. I love it. I love drinking like I never loved anything. You know, because what happens when I drink, you guys shape up. All you girls get real hot, you know, and all you guys aren't so scary. I mean, when I drink, something happens. It's just absolutely marvelous. You know, I didn't think that I could ever be an alcoholic because I tried to avoid drinking every day. And maybe if they rewrote one part of the big book, you know, maybe that little part where it says more about alcoholism, and you know, we switched from scotch to brandy, and we took a trip and not took a trip, and that sort of thing. And if I were to rewrite it, I probably would have wrote, you know, we smoked some crack and had some, talked to my inner child, or did some heroin, or something along those lines. Because I live with this delusion that someday I'll be able to control and enjoy my drinking. I mean, that's a great delusion that I have, is that, you know, one day I'm going to be able to control and enjoy it, you know, and I'm not able to do that. You know, if I'm enjoying it, there's no control. And if I'm controlling it, I'm not having a very good time. I'll back up to before I was drinking, because that's who I became when I stopped drinking. You know, when I got out of rehab, it felt like I was back in first grade. And what it was like in first grade, I was a new kid in a new school, and we had moved many towns away, and I looked at these kids, and they're all doing better than I was, and I looked at their sneakers, and that's how you tell how well somebody's doing in first grade or in rehab. I'm looking at these kids, and they had it going on, man. I was like, oh, God, look at these and kids. And it always seems like I'm the only stranger. Like maybe we just all met today from, distant cities, but after 20 minutes or so, it seems like everybody else knows each other. And I don't know how to do that. And these kids seem to get to know each other very quickly, and they're all best friends, and I got to, sort of break into the club, and I don't know what to say, I don't know how to say it, and I'm not really good at communicating, because when I'm thinking about what to say after you say something, you might keep talking. And what comes out of my mouth was relevant about 5 or 10 minutes ago. And you look at me weird, and I'm a little oversensitive, so I might hit you. Because I don't like you guys screwing with me. And it seems like everybody's always screwing with me. But this day in first grade, these kids were doing really well, and I want to impress people. I don't think, it's not something that comes naturally, letting down my armor and being real with people to let them get to know me. Okay, what I do is I put on a show. Everything's a performance. Each person I run into, it seems like my life had become an endless series of auditions by first grade. Because I want to say the right thing. I want to do the right thing. Secretly inside, what I'm saying is, love me. Please just treat me right. I'll be whoever you want me to be. And that's the way my life is. And this day I want to impress kids, so the teacher asks a question, and my hand darts up, I answer the question, I got it wrong. Now I think she's screwing with me. I can't believe, she's picking on me my first day, and I start thinking about what people are thinking about me. And I was always able to interpret things better than everybody else. I was born with this skill where I can look at somebody and know that they're a complete asshole. You know what I mean? I look at you and I can almost just about read your mind. I've always been able to interpret facial expressions, body language, like a little at the end of somebody's, statement to me. And, this day in first grade, I'm like freaking out. I feel like they're judging me. Like, they think I came to school on a short bus. Like, I got some mental problems. And I don't know what to do. So I'm going to redeem myself. She has another question. My hand darts up. I answer that, but I got it wrong. Now, I think this lady's a complete bitch because she's screwing me. I couldn't have gotten two wrong. They're out to get me. My first day. They're making my life miserable. Now it seems like I can feel people looking at me. I don't know about you guys, but when I do something completely stupid, the pressure and the anxiety just floats in the air. It makes walking difficult because there's so much tension and stress in the air. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh my God, this sucks. And, I don't know what to do. I got to get the hell out of here. And I'm measuring my breaths because I think I'm breathing too hard. And maybe I'm not sitting up straight enough. Or maybe I'm sitting too straight. Or maybe my socks don't match. Or maybe I should have sat over there instead of over here. And I play these mind games with myself. And I'm freaking out. And it couldn't have gotten worse, but I had to go to the bathroom. Now I've got to visualize everything I do before I do it. And I'm thinking, okay, I'll put my hand up. But the whole class in unison is going to say, hey, retard, she's not asking a question. Put your hand up. Or the teacher's going to say, okay, yes, retarded kid. What was it? Even you can get this one before you go, and I'll get that one wrong. And I can't handle it, but I've got good ideas. I always have really good ideas. And my idea is pee your pants. So I'm sitting there, and I'm going, And for the first few seconds, it wasn't a bad idea. You're like, oh. And then I looked down, and I was like, holy shit, this is a hell of a lot more than I thought. Right? And then I start thinking, wait a second, this is first period. Oh, it's going to be a long day. Now that's what it's like when I'm sober. It doesn't. It's not getting any better. I mean, year after year, it changes a little bit. On occasion, I'll engage in some sort of behavior, obsessive behavior, which makes me look wonderful for a second. You know, I'll study night and day, around the clock, every day of the week, and I'll get a really good grade. And the teacher will say, "Oh, that's great. Look what he did." You know, but it doesn't last long enough. You guys don't appreciate me as much as I need to be appreciated. I mean, it's not like every day is my birthday and we're all going to celebrate. I mean, I'd like it to be that way, but nobody wants to play along. You know, nobody really loves me as much as I need to be loved. No matter what I accomplish, it can be sports, it can be finances, it could be anything, nobody ever appreciates me as much as I need to be appreciated for me to be at ease, for me to be relaxed, for me to communicate without feeling like I'm being judged. You know, and I remember even a year later, the teacher comes in with a stack of books. She hands them out to everybody. She goes, "Class, great news. What we're going to do is we're going to read out loud from this book. Everybody gets to read a paragraph. We're not going to, you know, do our normal lesson today." And everybody thinks it's cool because we're not going to do anything. But I'm freaking out because there's like a spotlight on me. This is like an audition. This is like a Broadway production. Oh, I got to read this freaking paragraph. Oh, my God. I count the kids. Count the paragraphs.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, I'm reading, and I'm getting through it. I'm doing okay, and it's getting closer. I'm freaking out a little bit, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. And then some girl three seats over reads three paragraphs. Now, for most people in the class, that would not be grounds for aggravated assault. Okay? But this girl's out to get me. You know? And somebody has got to teach her a lesson. Okay? I don't know why I always have to be the one teaching everybody a lesson. Okay, but somebody's got to do it. Right? You know, fast forward a couple years later, there's a dance. You know, girls on one side, guys on the other. Seventh grade, nobody's doing much of anything in seventh grade. So we see these kids out there. There's a guy and a girl dancing, you know, kind of like goofy kids, right? And we start making fun of them because that's what we do, right? But 20 minutes later, there's more kids dancing. Half hour later, a lot of people are dancing. An hour later, a lot of people. And I'm going, "Oh, my God, who am I going to pick? Who am I going to pick?" I would have gone with any of the girls, okay, if no one was watching. Right? I'm thinking, "Oh, that one, this one, I got to, you know, she's got to, like, say yes, you know what I mean? Because if she says no, I'm going to be destroyed." You know, I'm sounding out in my head what I'm going to say, who I'm going to pick. And I finally pick my girl, and I'm, "Okay, I'll say this, she'll say this," and we're back and forth. But if she says no, I have to be able to inflict as much pain on her as I feel myself. Because I'm not going down alone. Right? So I get my mark. I'm walking out there, and all of a sudden, the music's going, everybody's dancing. "Oh, my God, you don't know how to dance." I'm like, "Oh, my God, oh." But some kid over here is bopping up and down with the music. I can bop, right? So I'm like, "Okay." So I'm going like this with the music. But some kid over here is going like this, and I'm going, "Ooh, look at this." So I'm swinging, I'm jumping, I'm bopping. And someone stops to stare. They're going, "What are you doing?" "It looks like I'm having a seizure." Right? Like, "What the hell's wrong with this guy?" Right? Oh, fuck. You know, I gotta regroup. So I go and I stand against the wall. I'm trying to get it together. And I'm like, "Oh my God, please." Oh. But the dance is over and I'm a loser. And I'm not part of the gang. I'm not at the party. I'm on the outside looking in. You know, and this sucks. I can't do this. You know, my life's not getting better. I'm not outgrowing this awkwardness. And this goes on for year, you know, it's like year after year after year. I'm just having these problems communicating with people. And I don't know how to do it. And what was about to happen was my life was going to change. My first night drunk, you could have diagnosed me as alcoholic. My very first night drunk. Because what happens for me does not happen for normal people. My first night drunk, I changed. I always thought you drink in the morning, drink by yourself, drink every day, then you'll be an alcoholic. But my first night drunk, I was an alcoholic. And what happened was this kid Mark called me up, and Mark was a bad kid. I love bad kids. If you're a normal, well-balanced guy, and you come up to me trying to have a conversation, I think you want to have sex. Right? I'm like, "What? You know, who the world? My birthday? What are you carrying?" You know, I get in a lot of fights. You know, I don't know how to deal with people. What happens when I let somebody get close to me? and have a normal, kind of connected, intimate sort of relationship, my feelings get hurt very, very quickly. Right? All of a sudden, I'm letting them play God. You know, and I feel devastated at some point or another because they're paying too much attention to somebody else. Right? So what happens is this kid Mark calls me up and he says, Jimmy, I got a case of Budweiser and some girls. Now I'm thinking about girls. I'm not thinking about Budweiser. Budweiser, you know, the older kids are drinking Budweiser, but girls, I'm thinking, oh my God. Oh. Yeah, I've been trying. I'm like 16. I've been trying to get married since I'm 5. Now, there's this girl that sat next to me in a homeroom. Her name was Amy. I look over at Amy every day, and I'm like, oh my God. Oh. She was gorgeous. You know what I mean? Just one of these girls. Like, oh. All right? And I'm still, this is 2 years later, I'm still sounding out what the hell I'm going to say. Okay? Because I'm afraid to make a move. I cannot handle rejection. All right? So I'm thinking that this girl's going to show up. You know, maybe this girl Lisa, who's a friend of my sister, that said hello to me once. I mean, it doesn't take too much for me to fall in love. Right? I mean, you could be waving to the guy behind me, and I'm in love. You know? Okay. You know, I'm like, hey, babe, you know? And so what happens is this, I'm excited. This car pulls, you know, up my driveway. I go running outside. I go running down the car. Back door opens up, and this girl hops out. And I take one look at her, and I'm thinking, get back in the car before the neighbors see you. I'm like, where the hell is Amy? Right? And I look in the back seat next to her. That's her ugly sister. I'm like, ooh, what? Ugh. You know, we're just like no good-looking girl in this car, right? But she goes, hop in. Hop in the middle. I'm like, okay. You know? I mean, she was bigger than me. I'm not getting my ass kicked in the driveway. But, you know what I mean? I'm like, okay, fine. I get in, right? We're driving, and I'm thinking, don't let anybody see me. You know? In fact, maybe you want to hit a tree. I'll go through the windshield. Right from the back seat, you know? Just sucks. You know? But I look at this girl, and she's got pretty eyes. And if I can just keep it to the eyes, you know what I mean? I'll just make my whole move around the eyes, you know what I mean? I can move my hands around, you know what I mean? I got to stick to the eyes. So I try, I give my best shot. And I'm like spitting and stammering and I can't talk to her. Why am I so broken? I mean, if you can't talk to a girl that you find repulsive, how pathetic are you? Right? So what happens is somebody hands me a Budweiser and I'm like, okay, whatever. I crack them. Ew, it tasted skunky. It had been sitting in the bushes for a couple of days. It's like, ew, but nobody else seemed to notice, so I just drank it. Now, I don't know if it was the second, the third, the fourth beer, but something happened. Something happens to me that does not happen to a non-alcoholic. Because I'm drinking, ooh. I look over, this girl lost 15 pounds. Oh my God, she is beautiful. Oh my God. And what happened was I said something. I don't know what I said. I don't know exactly how to say it. But I said something in a way that was just magical. Because I didn't think about what she was going to say. It wasn't like I'm, you know, coming with hat in hand, begging for her, you know, approval. Okay? It was like I was doing her a favor. You know, because her eyes went from like this judgmental, you know, just like, I hate you, you know, you piece of shit, you know, to this girl who was like, oh, I want you. And it's just like a glance, you know what I mean? I could see it in her eyes, you know, that hungry look. It was like, oh. And, you know, I figured I'm a nice guy. I'll take care of her. Right? So I said something, and she laughed, and she said something, and I laughed. Next thing you know, we're having a conversation. Now, that's a home run for a guy like me. You know, all of a sudden, I'm in the human race. I'm in the game. I'm at the party. I'm not on the outside looking in. Alcohol saved me. Alcohol allows me to do something I just can't do. Alcohol plugs me into a power that allows me to do things and say things and feel things that I don't know how to connect to any other way. I don't know how to live like that. I don't know how to function with any degree of confidence before that period. Alcohol changed my life. Right? And that night, something happened. You know, that will only happen to an alcoholic. Because when I'm drinking, the phenomenon of craving kicks in. Which means that when I start drinking, I take a drink and then the drink takes a drink. All bets are off. I have no idea what the hell's going to happen. So I start drinking and then I keep drinking and I can't stop drinking. Next thing you know, we're making out. And I'm thinking, Budweiser, the king of beers. Yeah. Right? And this is, it's just fantastic. I cannot believe I've waited so long to do this. right? But I keep drinking. And next thing you know, I'm kissing the wrong girl. But I know what to say. Alcohol allows me to say things and do things that I don't know how to do otherwise. Because this one's pissed because I'm kissing her sister and I'm like, there's enough to go around. I'll be right back to you. You know? And I am so wonderful. She should just wait her turn. Right? But next thing you know, I hit my first bottom. Now, bottoms don't get me sober. They just give me a, you know, an opportunity to get used to a situation I've yet to get used to. You know, that night, I'm laying face down in the gravel parking lot. I got cinders on my tongue, rocks in my face, rocks in my chest, and one of these girls is stepping on my back. Because apparently I said something. I mean, it's okay for Jenny Craig to give dining advice and not me. She's clearly oversensitive. All right? But I got used to laying in parking lots. It's a small price to pay for to join their human race. For a guy like me to live, to function, laying in parking lot's not good. Fast forward through my drinking. First time I'm sitting in the back of this police car and I got handcuffs on and I'm ducking and I'm embarrassed, I'm humiliated. I cannot believe my life sank as well. Now if you're here because you got arrested the first time, the second time is so much easier. It's so much easier. Believe me, it's not nearly as stressful. You wait 3, 4, 5, 6 times later, you know what's going to happen. You know what I mean? This is like a misdemeanor. It's not a big deal. First time I get evicted, I'm embarrassed. I'm humiliated. They put the big sign on the wall, on the door, and it's like, oh my God, what are you going to do? What are you, oh shit, you know? The second time you get evicted, it's a little bit easier. You keep getting evicted, you don't have so much shit to move. Right? I'm like, oh my God, furniture. You know? I remember one time I'm signing a lease. I have a check on the table. I'm sliding it across. I know I'm getting evicted. Right? Because you don't need an accountant. You don't have too much math to understand it. Month and a half security. First month's rent, that's 2.5 months. It took them 5 months to throw me out. I doubled my money by not paying the rent. You know? Screw them, right? Who cares? Right? I keep drinking, and I keep drinking, you know, and then all of a sudden I'm doing things that I couldn't imagine doing, you know? One night I go out for a couple drinks. I'm under finance. I got a big job the next day. I know I can't drink tonight, but somebody else is buying. And I'm not the kind of guy that's going to insult somebody who wants to buy me drinks. You know, I start drinking, and I keep drinking. And next thing you know, 50-foot of guardrail, a telephone pole, and two of my buddies in surgery. You know? And I don't learn my lesson. Okay? I don't learn from situations like that. I get used to them. Right? And I keep drinking. And I've been in many totaled cars. Because I love to drink. You know, I keep drinking. Fast forward through my drinking. I have a couple of drinks. Next thing you know, I'm in New York doing an armed robbery. Now, it seemed like a really good idea at the time. It's just like one of those things. The stars aligned and you just come right. You know what I mean? I had never thought about it before that, but it seemed like a good idea. You know? And then one afternoon, we're just drinking Budweiser. You know, just a couple of beers. That's not like really drinking, right? We had this guy come to our home group. He's like, they should have, you know, I heard all your stories. You're doing heroin and smoking crack and drinking, you know, vodka and Jack Daniels. They should have a special program for people who just drink beer. And I yelled out, they do, Al-Anon. Now, he never came back to our group. But this afternoon, I'm just drinking beer. And the beer, come on. Seriously, beer is not... You know, but what happens is I put any alcohol in me. Now it could be cooking wine, it could be mouthwash, it could be vanilla extract. I put it in my body, and that stimulates a phenomenon of craving, and I'm off the races. Because what happened was, soon after that, somebody pulled out some Jack Daniels. Oh, I fucking love Jack Daniels. You know? I love Jack Daniels. You drink, it's like eating, it's like you could chew it. You know, I love drinking, you know? And so I start chugging that, and next thing you know, we pick up this guy hitchhiking, and we decide to keep him. You know? Now, it seemed really funny at the time. It was really hysterical at the time. Yeah, at the beginning part. You know what I mean? Until he got lippy. You know? But, I mean, it worked out. Fast forward through my drinking, I get into some situations. Right? Now, I've got a big family, And the good thing about being, you know, having a big family and lots of cousins and aunts and uncles and nephews, I got a lot of places to crash. Okay? This couch here, the spare bedroom here, and if you keep drinking like I keep drinking, they're not going to last long. You know? And one by one, these people start becoming very narrow-minded about my drinking. You know, everybody's turning on me. You know what I mean? It's like the police one day, I'm backing out of my driveway. I'm not even on the road yet. I'm backing out of my driveway, and the lights go on. Guy's like right up on my ass. He goes, ha, up against the car. I'm laying across the hood. He's sticking something in my back. I'm thinking, I hope it's a gun. Jesus, what the hell is this weirdo? You know? He goes, Mr. Bach, can you explain to me why the plate on the front of the car doesn't match the one on the back? I'm like, well, I didn't have a fucking screwdriver. What do you want from me? You know, what are you going to do? Right? And then my sister turns on me. My little sister. I love my little sister. You know, I start drinking. Very soon after I start drinking, I love alcohol. So I want to turn her on, you know? So she's drinking with me, you know what I mean? Very tight family. We're partying and doing all this stuff. But she turns on me. We're sitting at dinner one night, and we're just hanging out. I'm a little hungover because I'm always a little hungover. And, you know, family conversations going around. And somehow I'm, like, the topic again. You know, my little sister's like, oh, you know what he did last night? I'm thinking, what? He peed in the dishwasher. At first, I'm denying. I'm thinking, oh, no. Well, maybe. Who cares? I mean, it's all connected. Why are you harassing me? Everybody's harassing me about my drink. You know? Fast forward, 1985, I go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Somebody gave me $20 to go to an AA meeting. This guy I used to run with gave me $20. And for $20, I'll go to a meeting. I don't care. Right? Right? I go to a meeting, and it was pretty cool. These guys are talking drinking stories. I like drinking stories, right? I couldn't believe they're talking about this stuff out loud. Right? But I was like, okay, that's cool. That's cool. You guys are really kind of screwed up. I mean, for you, it's probably a really good idea to stop, you know, drinking. You know, if I ever get as bad as you guys, I can come back here. And for the next 2 years, what I did was I visited Alcoholics Anonymous. I came to meetings so I could just keep it together during the week. I'm not going to not drink on weekends, okay? But I would go during the week. And then this friend of mine, this other guy, Billy, got sober. You know, he... the first guy, Steve, you know, in order to have some credibility with me to 12-step me into Alcoholics Anonymous, which these two guys did. Now, Steve, we had a lot of business endeavors together. Now, one of them involved dyeing my hair different colors, assuming different identities before the terrorists made it fashionable. Okay. We imported some South American agricultural products. We had some toxic waste deals going. Just a couple weird little things like that. But he was crazy. This guy was insane. I mean, I've seen him pull guns on people and just... residential, nice doors, and you know what I mean? Just, he was insane. Right? What had happened was this guy got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. He disappeared for like a week, and he'd gone to a detox. He came out, he's, you know, all shiny-eyed, talking about God, and I said, ooh. I mean, but it was good for him, because he was a disaster. He was dangerous. He was a crazy guy. You know, and then my friend Billy, same thing happened. They got him, you know. Now, his last run, he was like in a motel room. He threw the television through the window, and I think he threw a prostitute through it right after the television. And then he went to detox, and then, you know, AA came in, and he comes out talking about Jesus or whatever. I'm like, oh, Jesus, you know, wanting to save me, you know what I mean? I'm like, okay. But, you know, I went to some meetings, you know. He seemed to be doing pretty well. If it would work on him, you know, maybe, you know, it would work a little bit on me. I'm not really alcoholic. I don't drink every day. You know, and so I had been exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous. This whole God idea, though, these guys are talking about God. I'm like, I wish I could be so stupid. I wish I could buy it. How do you dumb down enough to believe this stuff? You know, how do you do that? I wanted to, but I couldn't figure out how to do that. You know? And what happened in October 1987 was that the market crashed a little bit. There were some mishaps. My boss was a little upset. My Coke dealer had $55,000 of his money. and he wanted it back. You know, and so I end up, you know, going to see somebody. We talked about my drinking. Next thing you know, I'm in a rehab. And this guy from Alcoholics Anonymous comes in. This guy, he comes in and he says, "Oh, I'm sober for 3 years." Well, I'm like, 3 years? Oh, you're getting carried away. Look at you. I mean, if you can stop for 3 years, why stop for 3 years? You know, if you can stop, you can stop and you start again. What's the big deal? You know, and he explained a little bit of the progression, the disease concept. He talked about not knowing when he might have that moment of clarity that would, you know, introduce him again to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and he talked about alcoholism, and he talked about God, and, you know, maybe the whole crowd just shut down when he started talking about God, but he stopped and he started to explain himself, and he talked about a God of his understanding. He didn't pitch any sort of religious affiliation. He said, you know, 3 years ago I got on my knees and I said a prayer to a God I didn't believe in and asked him to keep me sober. And I've been doing that every day since, and maybe there's some sort of connection because I haven't picked up a drink. It's like, okay, well, maybe there's a connection. And I didn't realize that you didn't have to believe in God to say a prayer, but, well, what the hell, you know? And it, you know, I don't know if it was him or some other guys that I'd heard talk about God. And they talk about like this power that's just awesome, you know. And you know, and they seem to have like a magic in their life. You know what I mean? These guys that believe in God seem to have like a like that magic that I used to have for Santa Claus. You know, when I remember when I was a little kid, I loved believing in Santa Claus. You know, it was just magic. I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, it was just fun to believe, and I wanted to believe. I wanted some magic back in my life. I wanted some wonder. I wanted some amazement. You know, and the next day I got on my knees and I said a prayer to a God I didn't believe in. You know? And I'll tell you, that was 21 years, 5 months, and 1 day ago. And I have not picked up a drink since that day. Maybe there's a connection. You know, that I didn't start believing in God because of that. I didn't start believing in God until I sponsored other people. I didn't know that there was a God for sure that had my back until I sponsored other people and looked at them come alive. What happens is I get out of rehab, I go to this meeting, and you have to understand that I had been to therapy for about 20 years. I remember I was like 7 years old, and some guy gave me a weird look, and I threw him down the stairs. You know, because I knew what he meant. Right? So, they had me looking at ink blots trying to figure out what I saw. And I don't know about you guys, but I make shit up. Okay? I don't know what that, you know, if I don't know the answer, I'm not going to look stupid. I'll make shit up, right? And that was always the same. Every time I go to therapy, I would try to be honest. She's like, "How do you feel?" Like, "How do I feel? How did I feel before you asked me, when you asked me, or now?" Okay. How do I feel? You know, it's a little early to pass the ball to me. I don't know how it's fucking. I don't know. Tell me how I'm doing. I don't know how I'm doing. And I try. I really tried really hard to kind of do the therapy thing. He's like, "Oh, I feel sad." And she liked that, so I go with that for a while. Right? And so I tell her some of the things that I've done. You know, and she judged me. And so the end of my story would change. Because I'm terrified of being judged. I will do anything, say anything, in order to not be judged. Okay? I will be whoever you want me to be. I've switched musical interest. I've driven cars based on trying to be popular and cool. I've had careers based on creating the right impression. My whole life was a charade in order to gain acceptance by you guys so you could like me, so I wouldn't feel like I was so fucking alone. Okay? I am the loneliest person on earth. Okay, and in going to therapy, I would try my best to try to get myself right, but it wouldn't work because it would always come to a point where I'd feel like she's judging me, you know, and my story would change and I'd veer from the truth, you know. And what happened when I got out of rehab? They said, "Go to a meeting, put your hand up, ask for rides to meetings." So I go to a meeting, I put my hand up, and I said, "Well, I just got a rehab, I need rides to meetings, so anybody can give me a ride, I'd really appreciate it." And what happened was that after the meeting, I'm walking out in the parking lot, and this guy yells across. He goes, "Hey, I can give you rides."
I said,
oh, okay. He said, well, where do you live? And I told him where I lived, and he lived two blocks away. I said, oh, that's pretty cool. He goes, you need a ride home? Sure, absolutely. And I'm walking toward him. He goes, well, there's a bunch of us, and he had like a bunch of like newcomer people near his car. I was like, well, and I do what I do, you know, as a broke newcomer. I put my hand into my empty pocket, and I'm like, well, he's like, well, you want to go to diner with us? You know, we're so, well, I don't know. Well. And he did what every good member of Alcoholics Anonymous would do. He said, no, no, no. You're new. You're supposed to be broke. My treat. He said, if you weren't broke, we'd be suspicious. And I laughed, he laughed, I got in the car, I went to the diner. And I just got with the guy before me got. I didn't know, I didn't want to make waves, I didn't want to be noticed. I didn't know how to do this whole AA thing. I just wanted to have a different kind of life. You know, so I go with him, and you know, these guys start telling some stories, and it's pretty tame at first, but then they start telling stories that you really shouldn't be talking about in public. You know, man, I'm looking at these guys like, oh my God, you know, keep it down. You know, maybe the statute of limitations passed on your stuff, but not mine. You know? You know? And they keep talking. By the end of the evening, I'm laughing with them, right? The guy drops me off that night, and I'm like, oh my God, this is cool. And he goes, I'll pick you up tomorrow. I'm thinking, how do you know I didn't have plans? And I'm like, okay, you know. So the next day he comes, picks me up, and every day he took me to AA meetings. Every single day. You know, I couldn't get away, you know. He's just like, come on, let's go. We're going to, oh, okay, whatever, you know. I'm just in the car. It's like, where are you going? I'm, what do you care, you know? It's like, oh, shit, you know. I go to a discussion meeting. I'm going to share some of the stuff I learned in rehab because it's pretty profound. My hand goes up. He pushes it down. Don't hurt yourself, kid. One thing leads to another. I'm feeling pretty good in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm feeling pretty good running around with these guys. But it's not lasting long. It's not lasting. You know, what happens is, I'm out of rehab for a little while. I'm the new guy. Everybody's paying attention like I'm a celebrity. All of a sudden, this little puke gets out. He's got like 4 days sober. Or, you know, I'm like, what's going on with this? And everyone's paying attention to him. You know, what about me? I'm the new guy. You know, I'm hoping this guy drinks. I'll get my spot back. Right? So, you know, AA's not turning out so well. These guys are not, like, loving me, you know. And then all of a sudden I get home and, you know, my mom says something. And what I'm hearing is, like, you know, not what she's saying. You know, she asked me a simple question, maybe, you know, what's going on financially? And what that means is, you know, you're a loser. Why couldn't you pay your bills? You owe me so much money. You know, that's what I'm hearing. Right, and then one day she comes in, she gives a stack of, at least like a bag, big brown bag. I open her up, there's like bills and stuff. Oh, 3 years of unopened mail. I'm like, oh shit, look at all. And I look at one and it's like from a credit card company and it's like, ah, we want so much money and you don't pay, we're gonna go, they're gonna charge you more. And I'm like, oh Jesus. The next one's even worse, and I go fast forward a couple, like a year later, and they're like begging for the money. I'm going, ha, got them where I want them here. Right? Then all of a sudden I get to the court ones. I'm like, oh my God. And I got warrants from towns I've never been to. I'm like, holy shit, what? I never did that, did I? It's horrible, you know? And so not only am I suffering from that normal sense of anxiety that I suffered with in first grade, where I'm worried about what you're thinking about me, and oh my God, this is horrible. But that coupled with all the things that I do when I'm drinking, oh, I'm freaking out. And I'm like, I hope nobody remembers that. And I can't walk down that street, and I can't go to that store, and I can't go to that restaurant, and I can't have, I got to have a family reunion, or I'm going to, Christmas, I'm going to say, oh my God, and, you know, it's like, oh my God, you know. I can't, all the catastrophes going on in my life, you know what I mean? All the broken relationships, you know what I mean? I mean, when you're walking around sober, you know, a couple months sober, and you haven't worked the steps, and you run into some girl, and the last time you saw her was when she woke up covered in your urine. it's like, oh, I'm getting the hell out of this relationship. We don't need to explain this. You know, my life is like crapping out in sobriety. And I go to meetings with this guy, and they're not doing the trick. And he drops me off one night. It's 10 o'clock at night. He drops me off, and my head won't stop. The meeting didn't do what for me what it's supposed to do. And I'm freaking out. What am I going to do now? And I'm sitting at my parents' kitchen table, and now it's 11 o'clock, and I'm staring at the clock, and I got to do something. I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, now it's 12 o'clock, and I'm freaking more. And now it's 1 o'clock, and I got to get to the bar before they close. You know, what happened? I don't know why. But I picked up the phone, and I called this guy. And now he's a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I called him at 1 o'clock in the morning. He wasn't screening his calls. Okay, he wasn't too busy. He answered his phone. And when he answered, he goes, "Hello?" And I go, "Hey, how you doing?" Right? Now he goes, "What's going on?" I go, "Nothing. Just hanging out." Now, if you get a new guy calling you at 1 o'clock in the morning, he says, "I'm just hanging out," what he's saying is, "I'm dying. I'm about to put a gun in my mouth or go drink. I need help. Now." And what he said was, "Why don't you come by? You want to come over?" I said, "Yeah, okay." So I go out in the garage. I steal my little sister's Schwinn's, like a little purple Schwinn with a basket. You know what I mean? And one day I'm doing armed robberies. Next day I'm riding a purple little girl Schwinn. You know? I'm like, oh, Jesus. So I race over to his house. I bang on the door. He says, "Come on in. Come on in." So I sit down. He goes, "Can I make you a sandwich?" I said, "Oh, that's pretty cool." He makes me a nice sandwich. I sit down. I'm eating. I'm relaxing. He sat down on the couch next to me. He looks over. He says, "How you doing?" "Fine." We're not going any deeper than that, right? And what this guy did was radically different than every therapist I'd ever been to. 20 years of therapist, and this is the first time someone trying to help me made an approach that I found acceptable. Because what he did was he didn't interview me, he didn't grill me, he looked in my eyes and he started telling me his story. He said, "Ah, you're working in New York, huh?" I said, "Yeah. There's a lot of bars in New York." I go, "Oh my God, there's one on every corner." He goes, "Huh, must be tough getting sober in New York." I go, "You have no idea." He goes, "Yeah, I do. I got sober in New York." I was like, "Oh yeah?" He starts telling me a drinking story. He says, "Yeah, one night I was out with this guy from work, and we're drunk, we're shit-faced, we're in the back of this cab, and next thing you know, this other cab driver comes around the corner and smashes into the cab." I was like, "Yeah, so?" He goes, "Well, the cab driver gets out, goes and talks to the other cab driver. I got tired of waiting. I jumped up front and took the cab." I was like, "Well, that's pretty cool." He said, "Next thing you know, I'm in the tombs." I'm thinking, how the hell does this guy know about the tombs? Holy shit. He goes, "Yeah. They had me in shackles." And I was remembering, shackles. Oh, my God. He said, "Yeah, there was a woman on each side." I was like, whoa. I've been in the tombs. They separate the men and the women. He says, "Well, I looked down, they had really big hands. I looked up and they had Adam's apples." And I was like, holy shit. You know? And all of a sudden, I started telling him this story. I was taken to my grave. I said, "Well, that's nothing. One night I was down in Washington Square Park. Next thing you know, I'm chasing this transvestite around the park with a hatchet." Now, if he looked at me, now, if he was a good therapist, psychiatrist, if he really had it together and knew what the hell he was doing, right, he probably would have said something along the lines of, "Well, Jim, why don't you explain a series of events that led up to the case?" Now, we didn't need to go there. Right? I wanted my money back. Now, he looks at me. He starts laughing. He told me another story. I was like, he told me this sexual escapade that was like, oh my God. This guy's like Jeffrey Dahmer. Holy shit. I'm going to get the hell out of here. This guy might eat me. Right? I'm, oh my God, what am I going to do? Right? Oh, shit. He looks at me. I'm like freaking, you know, I'm counting the steps to the door. I'm going to just run. Right? He starts laughing. And I just started laughing because he was laughing. And next thing you know, I'm telling him another story. And that went back and forth maybe an hour and a half. And what happened was at the end of that hour and a half, this guy knew more about me than 20 years of therapists combined. Mm-hmm. What this guy did was, by telling me his story, he was like setting down his armor and making himself very approachable. And I could have shared anything because I didn't feel like he was going to judge me. And I'm leaving that night and he goes, "You know, you're doing more for me than I'm doing for you." I'm like, "What are you talking about? You didn't tell me anything." Yeah. I'm like, "No, man, you just saved my life." He goes, "No, you have no idea." Now, what happened was I wouldn't understand that for many years. You know, what happened was I started sponsoring some guys, and, you know, in my first couple of years, I sponsored like a dozen guys at 2 years sober. But what happened was I didn't want a sponsor really button into my life. I didn't want to be accountable to anybody. I didn't want to take shit from anybody. Okay? I didn't want to... What I wasn't willing to do was I wasn't willing to learn how to be a sponsor by being a sponsee. Right? And what happened was that 5 years sober, I got aggravated because none of the guys I was sponsoring stayed sober. And I don't do anything for a very long time that I don't do really, really well. You know? In the first couple of years, I had a lot of guys that were running as a pack. But when they start dropping and everybody starts dropping, I get discouraged. Right? And then my sponsor's like button into my life. Even like one of these sort of middle of the road AA guys, you know what I mean? He's like, nah, you know. And he starts buttoning in my life. I'm thinking, maybe I need a therapist. You know, I start talking to therapists, and you know, start hitting the tacos, and I'm talking to my inner child, and I'm crying. And all that stuff is really good stuff. Okay? But if I don't have somebody in my life that's willing to lower their guard and be real with me about who they are, okay, I'm not going to be real with the other person, you know. And so what happens is I'm basically sponsoring myself from 5 years to 10 years. And if you sponsor yourself as well as I do, okay, you too can be indicted by the New York District Attorney's Office. Right? So next thing you know, I'm facing 5 to 15 for security fraud. Okay, as a direct response to me sponsoring myself, because I didn't want to follow direction. I didn't want to be accountable. I don't want to, you know, I wanted my sponsor to be my best friend. You know what I mean? I didn't want like a hierarchical sort of sponsor. I don't want somebody talking down to me. Meaning, I don't want somebody to tell me the truth. I don't want somebody to hurt my feelings. I want somebody to be my buddy. You know, I want some leverage in the relationship. I want somebody who needs me to be their buddy so they won't tell me the complete, unadulterated truth. Okay? And that's what I got. You know? And so, you know, fast forward, I end up meeting this guy who's real active in AA, real happy. I mean, embarrassingly happy. You know what I mean? And he showed me an approach to doing Alcoholics Anonymous that was 1% going through the steps and 99% taking other people through the steps. You know, my life got good. I ended up going for the sentencing hearing, and I had a trust in God that I had never had my entire life. I knew I was going to be okay. I was outside the courtroom, 100 Center Street in New York, and I'm on my knees saying a prayer to this God. And the prayer went something like this: God, thank you so much. Thanks for taking me through this almost entire process without having much fear at all. And I know if you have me going to prison today, I'm going to sponsor as many people as I can. If that's where you want me to go, I'll do the best job I can. I just want to thank you for not letting me kill myself. You know, and I appreciate all you've done for me. And I was about to get up off my knees, but what slipped out of my mouth was, "Hey God, you got to realize there's a lot more on the outside." And I hop up on my feet, and I'm laughing, walking to this courtroom. I'm walking into this courtroom a free man, and there's not a goddamn thing that judge could do to take away my freedom. All right? And I don't know why, out of nine of us, the guy said probation. No fine, no residue, no probation. Pretty fucking cool, you know? So I start sponsoring people, you know? 2 months later, I'm sponsoring like a dozen guys. I get back into business, you know? I'm making money. I'm running this ad agency. Everything's going well, right? Then I have a mishap. This client's not paying me. He owes me $30,000. I'm like, you son of a bitch. Now, I don't like to get screwed for money. I have this like psychotic streak, okay, that tells me that people are screwing me, even when they're not screwing me. But God forbid you screw me when you screw me, right? And I'm thinking, this son of a bitch. Okay, we're gonna work this out. You know, I'm gonna get my goddamn money, and right? And I have this conference call scheduled, and I'm ready for it, right? And I'll destroy their company if they don't pay me. And what happens is the phone rings, and it's the psych unit in our local town. He says, well, we got a guy, we can't get through to him. I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, this guy, was, you know, he's definitely an alcoholic, but we've tried shock treatment, group therapy, we've done everything. Oh, the best medication, nothing's effective on this guy. This guy is catatonic. This guy is hopeless. Now think about it, hopeless. Now depression's up here, hopeless is way down here. far worse than depression. That's what this program, Alcoholics Anonymous, deals with, hopelessness. You know, and what he said, what this lady said was, can you come over and talk to him? We can't get through to him. Maybe you can help him. And if, what I'm thinking is, yeah. Who cares? I want my money. Right? But what comes out of my mouth, because I had a sponsor, if I told him that story and I told him that I didn't help the guy, we wouldn't have a lot in common. And what happened was I said, okay, I'll be right by. And I called up these people I was supposed to have a conference call with, and I'm like, hey, something came up, urgent matter, I got to go to the hospital, I'll call you in a couple hours. And they're like, rah, rah, rah. And I'm like, you know, there's nothing I do, I'll call you in a couple hours. I go to the hospital, I look at this guy, and I'm like, oh my God, where'd they drag him from? Look at him. I mean, he had like sweatpants that were saturated with urine, dried and wet and dried, and he's got like sores on his neck, and he's got matted hair. And I'm like, oh, this guy's gross. Well, I don't. I never got that bad. Right? And my sponsors always told me, it's not you. You're not God. You're just a reflection. You know, many of you probably heard the story. You know, it's like the moon being just, you know, illuminated because of the power of the sun. You know, and think about what God could do for you. You know, and he told me that story. I'm thinking, oh, God, it's not going to work. But what I did is I said a prayer. I said, okay, God, you better, I don't know what the hell to do with this guy. Right? You better step in here because I'm outnumbered. You know? And what happened was, I look at this guy and I had no idea what to say, but what came out of my mouth was, how you doing? My name is Jim. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Chances are, if I get an opportunity to tell my story to somebody today, I might not pick up a drink. Do you think I could tell you my story? And what the guy said was, okay. And I looked in his eyes and looked right into his soul, and I told him the story that I forgot. I never even remembered it. I said, yo, there's one time at the end of my drinking, I'm living behind my girlfriend's parents' basement, okay, so she can keep an eye on me. And sometimes she let me drive her car, but one time she let me drive her car, and I totaled it. And before the cops got there, I told her, you know, I had to tell her that I didn't have a driver's license and we better switch seats. Right? So this girl's a little upset with me, and this guy's listening, like, you know, kind of half bored, like, why is he telling me this story? I said, but next thing you know, this girl's insurance company sends her a check. She gets a brand new car. You know, but get a load of this girl. She doesn't even thank me for the new car. He looks at me a little quizzical, you know. Right? He says, and I said, well, what happened was I disappeared a lot, and this girl had this brand new car with light blue velour seats, and she wouldn't let me drive. And I had disappeared for 3 or 4 days, and I got like weird pains in my stomach, and I'm like, what organ is this? And I go, that's not an organ. Well, oh, shit, what do you do about that? You know, oh. And my diet consists of vodka and beer nuts, whatever you can get at the bar, right? And I show up for this girl, and we're driving to the beach. Her parents had some money, because other girls whose parents have money. We're driving to the beach, and I feel this weird pain, and the guy's looking at me like, yeah, so. And I felt this weird pain, and I thought it was a little bit of gas, but I looked back, and I shit my pants. This guy looks at me, and all of a sudden, out of complete hopelessness, all I hear is, I did that! Right? Now, you can't tell me that God doesn't provide a connection. You can't tell me that everybody on this planet isn't uniquely qualified to affect a positive change in somebody else. He starts laughing. He tells me a story. I'm thinking, yeah, he probably shit his pants today. Look at him. So I tell him another story. He laughs. He tells me another story. I laugh. That went back and forth. I don't know how long it was, maybe an hour. But I left there. He had a smile ear to ear. And I looked back and I said, you're doing more for me today than I'm doing for you. He's like, what? I get back. I'm thinking, God's got my back. I'm doing this for him, and I know what he's going to do for me. I get back on the conference call. I'm thinking, they said, no, it's $60,000. I'm like, what the? Come on. I start laughing. The guy goes, would you snap? I said, well, at least no one died. And what it did was it just leveled out my thinking. Right? And that company hired me to do hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of business because they trusted me. They trusted what Alcoholics Anonymous did for me. It wasn't me. Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to be much more than I am. It's a power so much greater than myself. It makes me able to live in a way that is far beyond anything I've ever been able to achieve without alcohol. You know, if I can't get a better buzz in Alcoholics Anonymous than I can on the street, I'm getting it on the street. You know, if I can't get a better buzz in AA than I can get from Jack Daniels, I'm drinking Jack Daniels. If I can't get a better buzz in Alcoholics Anonymous than I can from smoking crack, believe me, I'd be crawling on my hands and my knees, smoking paint chips and toenails again. Right? I love the buzz. If you're in Alcoholics Anonymous and you're not getting the buzz, it's your fault. Okay, what this big book is, what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is a recipe book. Now, it's got a picture of the cake. Those are the promises after each step. That's the picture of the cake. Now, it's got a very detailed recipe on how to achieve that. Okay? If your cake doesn't look like that cake, it's not the book's fault. So, anyway, I want to thank you for allowing me to stay sober another day.